Hello, everyone, and welcome back to our podcast, Our Two Cents. Let's chat. As always, I'm joined by Vivek. Hello, best friend. How are you?
I'm good. Good as can be, considering this is our, what, fourth time recording this episode?
Oh my God. This is our fourth time recording this episode. In fact, after our third time re-recording it, we had to take like a 4-day break
Yeah.
because it was so frustrating.
We were so stressed. We were like, please just let us finish our goddamn podcast.
Our
This
third time
stupid.
was amazing. Like
Yeah.
we were so quick with it,
Like we had a
and
conglomeration of our thoughts.
yeah, because granted, it was the third time we were recording
Yeah.
it. At this point, we sort of knew what to say.
Like memorized.
Yeah.
And then I guess then Spotify Green Room decided to be garbage, but it's okay. Who cares? We're here now.
And we're
So.
back to Anchor. So if the quality is really shitty, clearly we're advertising our
We're doing great.
platforms where like amazingly.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're back on Anchor. Sorry if the quality seems like a step down, but alas, here we are. So I'd like to start by saying that all the AdSense for this episode is going to go to the NAACP, just like our last episode, and our last episode was on voting rights. So why is
Right.
it going to the NAACP? ACP? I said that right.
NAACP, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that brings us to our topic, and today we're going to be talking about the pitfalls of the criminal justice system here in America, but really, it could be pointed to any other place in the world too. Because it's all shitty. But I think it's also like the reason we talk about, that we like sort of bring American policies into this is like first we live here, but also as people say, it's a melting pot. So it's easier to pick out racial differences and biases here than it is in other places that are regionally focused. But yeah, I think we wanted to start by talking about the Kyle Rittenhouse acquittal, which the verdict was reached a week ago at this point. Vivek, do you want to sort of explain the case?
Sure. So, I think it was last summer, the protests in Kenosha, Wisconsin were going on over the shooting, and murder of an innocent black man named Jacob Blake, who was shot, was it 7 times in the back?
Yeah, 7 times in the back.
Yeah, 7 times in the back, right? In the back, if that, makes any sense. I'm trying to emphasize that because it was truly a thing that people were talking about. It was in the back. He wasn't, running towards the police officers. He wasn't doing anything really. He was just shot for no reason. So protests were going on in Kenosha about that, about the unfair shooting. Already George Floyd, the incident with George Floyd's murder had happened. And so people were already kind of steeped in their emotions. And then this just kind of added on to that. So, because of that, there was, there were protests going on. And this, at the time, 17-year-old, right? At the time,
At the
17.
time.
Yeah. At the time, he was 17 years old. This dude named Kyle Rittenhouse left from his house in Antioch, Illinois, which is about, I think, a half an hour away from Kenosha, Wisconsin. And he left in a car and he drove to the scene, or not to the scene because it was all over Kenosha, but
But
to a
sort of where the
spot in
rioting
Kenosha,
was happening, yeah.
right, to the riots, to the protests, to quote quote guard the peace. He was standing outside, I think, a car dealership with his, AR-15, and telling people, he was guarding the car dealership. It was his duty to make sure businesses weren't burnt to the ground. So basically he was standing there, quote quote, guarding the car dealership when one of the protesters, the protester's name is escaping me right now. But one of the protesters lunged at Kyle Rittenhouse because they're, I mean, we don't know the because obviously, but this
Joseph
protester,
Rosenbaum.
yes, Rosenbaum, thank you, lunged at Kyle Rittenhouse. Some say it was because he saw Kyle had, a machine of an AR-15 in his hands. Some people say it was just because, tensions were high already with the protests. But regardless of the reason, he lunged at Kyle Rittenhouse and Kyle Rittenhouse shot him fatally. And then again, another protester lunged and the same thing happened. He shot him fatally as well. And then a third one had lunged at Kyle Rittenhouse, but Kyle Rittenhouse did shoot him, but in the bicep only, so not fatally. But he did wound him pretty bad. There was a crowd gathering basically, and they went to the police officers that were down the street parked in their squad car, and they said, "There's a guy here with an AR-15, and he's shooting people. Please do something." And so the police officers started moving in that direction. But the problem was, even as Kyle Rittenhouse was walking towards the police officers didn't think it was him. So they just kind of kept moving on. Now, eventually, Kyle Rittenhouse did turn himself in, accompanied by his mother. And the police took him into custody, obviously. So then, you know, there was lots of anger, but it had, for the most part, the big stir around the movement had subsided until, I think it was, did his trial start in October or in November?
His trial started November 1st, and the acquittal was on November 19th. So yes, okay. It was just about 19 days, like 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. So exactly at the beginning of November, the trial started. And when the trial started, there were a few things that struck some people as odd. Kirtana, did you want to say them?
Oh, well, yeah. Firstly, I kind of wanted to mention the counts at which he was charged. There was first degree reckless homicide, use of a dangerous weapon, first degree recklessly endangering safety, first degree intentional homicide, first degree attempted homicide, and his failure to comply with an emergency order from the state government. Their governor had issued an 8 p.m. curfew. And as the trial was going on, people immediately noticed some things were kind of conducted a little bit weirdly. Firstly, Kyle Rittenhouse was allowed to pick his jurors, and normally it's a court official that does this, correct? And it's a professional that does this, and even though Kyle Rittenhouse was able to pick the jurors at random, it was still from right off the bat, you could tell that the judge was rather empathetic towards Kyle, given his age, his race, whatever it may be. And obviously Kyle fed into it. He cried a good bit, and he was treated with a lot of compassion for someone who just killed two people, in my opinion. So he was allowed to pick his jurors, so right off the bat people could tell that things were conducted rather weirdly. And even the way the judge, like his body language towards Kyle, the sort of questions that he was asking seemed rather tame in comparison to me,
black man
on the stand.
One clarification, he didn't pick his jurors, he picked which six to dismiss. Same thing practically.
So
people were noticing that there was a lot of, you know, the tendencies of the judge were to be almost favorable to Rittenhouse and the defense. So that was one thing that some people had noticed. And then simultaneously, so to jump to another train of thought for a second, simultaneously, actually, I don't know if it was simultaneous. Well, it was, because it started October 18th. So the Ahmaud Arbery trial, although Ahmaud Arbery wasn't the one on trial, it was his murderers who were on trial, the three white men, was going on at the exact same time. So at the same time, you kind of have these two, you know, trains of justice being kind of served.
These were both events that very much sparked a lot of controversy, I would say, in 2020. Right.
They're very concurrent.
Yes. And they would sort of be talked about simultaneously, like you were saying earlier, like even while it was happening, you know, the Ahmaud Arbery case would be talked about whenever Kyle Rittenhouse was being talked about, just because it's like that contentious battle. Yeah, it's that contentious battle over race and how a black man is treated versus how a white man is treated. So
exactly.
Yeah. And the Ahmaud Arbery, that trial was from October 18th to November 24th. So it just concluded like 2 days ago, 3 days ago.
And so for those of you who don't know, the Ahmaud Arbery trial was, Ahmaud Arbery was a young black man who was running in Brunswick, Georgia, which is kind of like below Savannah. And what happened is these three white men, I think it was only two of them who had the gun, but I may be wrong about that. Basically, they shot him for absolutely no reason. And then the third man was, you know, accused of both both egging them on and not doing anything to stop the assault on Ahmad. So these three men were being put up for his murder, and they were being tried in Brunswick County. Not Brunswick County, what's the county? Glynn County, in a trial. So at the same time, like we just said, you have the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, where we're seeing him being tried for murdering two protesters, and seriously injuring a third. And then you have another concurrent trial where it's more specific, almost, where these white men have, for absolutely no reason, you know, gone out and murdered this black man in Georgia, in the South, which is also, of course, something that we take into account usually. Mm-hmm. So the verdicts actually were quite different in both of these cases. With the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, it was found that he was, you know, he not was acquitted. Mm-hmm. He was not guilty. He was acquitted on all charges. So basically that's, of course, the judge saying he did not murder, or it's said that he did not murder these people. He did not, you know, commit homicide. And so one of the things I think that was, I don't know, I laughed, but that may just be because I'm a twisted person, but it was kind of funny to see how he broke down in tears when the verdict was read, because those were the fakest emotions I think I've ever seen, because you could just see that when he broke down, everyone was, you know, tweeting about, everyone who was defending him was tweeting about how, oh, can't you see he was so relieved that justice was served? He was so relieved that, you know, he wasn't going to have to waste the rest of his life in prison. But when I saw the verdict read and when I saw him break down in tears, the first thing that came to my mind is he's relieved because he really thought that justice was going to be served. He really thought he was going to go away for life. Mm-hmm. Like, he thought he was actually going to have to take responsibility for his actions. And more likely than not, it was like he's getting a cruel reality, you know. He thought he was going to face the cruel reality that sometimes the U.S. justice system does favor justice. Mm-hmm. So anyway, but that's just my opinion. I'm sure he was crying for whatever reasons he has.
Of course. And so many people quickly came to his... Mm-hmm. support, and they were like, he's so young, hopefully he'll make something of his life now. And I know as they walked out of the courtroom, his defense attorney was talking to the press, and he was like, it's such a relief, we're so relieved. Like, he never meant for it to get, like, go this far, and he never meant for this to happen. And it's like, at this point, he's an 18-year-old fully grown ass white man. Okay. And even before that, even when he was carrying around that military grade weapon, prior to that, he quit high school and he was training in cadet programs, right, with police, in police departments and fire departments. So he very much knew the extent of that weapon. He knew exactly the repercussions, and he went off and fired that weapon anyways.
He wasn't so it's just not a confused little, you know, kid
who was just trigger happy. No, right, not at all. He very exactly much
knew the exact consequences.
Mm-hmm. He was training for years with police departments and alongside police officers. He very much knew what he was capable of.
Right. And I would hope that at that age, you know, that, like, you're not allowed to just go murder people on the street. Mm. So he was fully aware, or he should have been fully aware, of the fact that he was carrying a deadly weapon, and also of the fact that it's not okay to go murdering people. But alas, justice, quote, quote, was served, and he was acquitted. So there was a lot of outrage with this, but more than just outrage. Yes, as there should be. But there was more than just outrage. There was a mix of emotions, as there usually are. But along with the outrage, there was an outpouring of anything from relief to, well, what can be done? Well, what else is there to hope for at this point? And I think, actually, if I could tie in, I don't know how many people know news anchors, but there is this anchor on MSNBC, I believe, named Chris Hayes, and he tweeted, and he was like, you know, I really hope genuinely that this kid goes out and he, you know, makes something of his life, and he contributes to the world, and he makes the world a better place. And everybody in the replies was like, what? I'm trying to say it was just so shocking to me and to people in the replies. Not even just shocking, but more like just like disgusting that this, white man, this fully grown white man who has full control of, his senses, he has full control of, obviously he's a news anchor, so he's reporting on these issues, he's getting exposure to them all the time. It was just so disgusting that then he, of all people, would go out and tweet this horridly, insensitive thing, right? When the verdict has just barely been announced. There are, the black community is grieving basically because it's like at the same time as this, you're seeing that there's a whole trial going on about, is it okay to murder basically a black man who is just running, who is just jogging. So why would you think that it's okay at that moment to put out a statement and say, I hope he can make a better life for himself? And someone in the replies had a very poignant thought, which was that he said, what else is there to hope for at this point? And someone replied and said, what we're hoping for is a day when white vigilantism is no longer, rewarded by the government, no less, and a day when black kids won't have to live in fear while white kids can go shoot up, can go shoot and kill two people and not be nearly as afraid. And I was like, that's the point, which this Chris Hayes dude didn't seem to get, which is that no one is saying, specifically that Kyle Rittenhouse, he's never going to do anything good in his life. I'm sure now he's just going to go and be a bad person, which, regardless, if you are saying that, that's a whole nother discussion. No one is saying that. What we're saying in this moment is that why should he be freed after murdering two people? Whereas in Georgia, right now, at that very moment, there was a trial going on to determine if people who murdered a black man, innocent black man, should even be prosecuted.
Yeah,
And so I
and
think that was a lot of the outrage, but go ahead. Yeah.
yeah, there are so many points that you can that I could touch on just from what you just said about the tweet. Firstly, starting off, like even if this is a conversation that you don't want to listen to, and if you're all pro Kyle Rittenhouse, et cetera, and you're looking at it strictly through the perspective of race for a minute, even though I'm not trying to diminish that aspect of it at all, because that's what this entire conversation is about, for a minute, forget that and think exactly the white vigilantism. You are, by acquitting him, you are encouraging crime. You are telling kids they can go around carrying AR-15s out into the street and not face repercussions for it. You are telling them that it's fine, you're not going to be put in jail. Like, that's exactly the message you're sending out as a legal system, firstly. Secondly, going to your point of, yeah, just being trigger happy and recklessly murdering black people who are absolutely no, like, they're of no imminent threat. You get what I mean? And just getting trigger happy and shooting and doing whatever you want. That's the second bit of it. It's like, here you have, you get what I mean? Like, it's just,
Yeah, good.
black kids are not out here on the street and like they're dying just because they have a hairbrush in their car or because they're walking with a water bottle, et cetera, for you to murder two people and not face any repercussions for it. And the second bit of the Chris Hayes thing where he's saying like, oh, what can be done? And this
What is there to
whole
hope
beacon
for?
of hope and light at the end of the tunnel spiel. Well, this is something that I talked about the last three times we've recorded this episode, but going back to a couple of weeks ago when the whole Travis Scott thing happened at his Astroworld concert and eight people, was it eight or 10 people? I think it's now 10 people
I thought it
who
was
had,
nine, actually.
I heard eight to
I
10
can look it up.
people. I don't want to be insensitive. We should probably look it up.
Yeah. Are we looking for just injuries or just death? No, death, right?
Deaths.
I've just got death. Illinois family too. Travis, this was as of November 11th. The death toll rose to nine.
So there you go. Nine people died completely due to Travis's irresponsibility. I'm not trying to take away from that either. But have you seen anyone, a single person, have the courage, yet audacity, to say something like, what can be done? How can you even say that? Yeah. You know what I mean? It's something that no one would know. I can't even imagine a scenario where anyone would come to his defense. Sure, there are some people that are saying it's not necessarily 100% Travis's fault. That's not the point I'm trying to make here. The point I'm trying to make here is when a black man acts a certain way and puts people's lives in danger, everyone's there to criticize them, rightfully so. But when it's a white man, it's what can be done.
Right.
It's if two lives weren't just lost. It's the complete tone deafness and insensitivity in that tweet. Go ahead.
I would even posit the fact that his wording is worse than what you just said, because what you just said is awful, sure, you know, like that he would say that. But he said, what else is there to hope for at this point? And it's like, what do you mean? What else is there to hope for? You're not even having the decency to say, what else is there to work towards? You're saying, what else is there to hope for?
As if this isn't expected. And how could you say that as a political commentator, as a white man, sitting there with your, you know what I mean, $300 iPhone.
Right.
This out when an entire community of people is hurting.
And that's also the thing, is that how can you be a public figure who is so tone deaf? Of all the times and things to tweet out, this was the time you chose, and that was what you chose.
I feel like that's the other thing that a lot of legislative officials, and he's not one, but just like you said, public figures need to realize it's not theory. We're not sitting in a political science class, and this is some hypothetical example. This is real life. Where people are losing families, they're losing sons, daughters, nephews, aunts, uncles, grandparents, mothers, fathers, and you're sitting there, and minutes after this happened, that's what you have to say.
Right. Literally, he's just gotten acquitted, and the thing you think to say is, what else is there to hope for?
I can't imagine of anything that's more inhumane.
And that's the other thing.
How much empathy do you have to be lacking for that to even be a thought?
Well, and that's another thing that we were talking about, with the fact that, people around us will say, everything is, why do you make everything political? You know, stuff like that, where it's literally not, right? How is saying that it's unacceptable for black people to be murdered in the streets, how is that political?
Also, how is that a conservative view?
Right.
It's like the other day we were sitting in class and this one girl was saying, we're all leftists, we're all empathetic. Oh. How disgusting is it that empathy is now something that has to be associated with Democrats?
Yeah.
That's how polarized everything has become. Mm-hmm. And it's also the over-politicization. We often complain that the people around us are apolitical and they're not involved enough. But then when people, on the flip side, this is what happens when it's if they don't care about black people, they're conservative now.
Well, and that's the other thing is that, and that's the other thing is that people will be so quick to, label themselves as, I'm a conservative, I'm a democratic mainstay, I'm a leftist, I'm a proud leftist, I'm an anarcho-communist. But then what are you doing with that? What does that, that does nothing unless you practice those ideals. If your ideals are, I only support black-owned businesses, then are you actually doing that? Or are you just, going out and buying your Kraft mac and cheese and sitting at home and tweeting about it? I hate to use a Meghan McCain term, but there's no intellectual honesty.
I think that's the other thing that a lot of people aren't realizing. I feel they're viewing both of these cases as something that are so distant, and they're looking at it from 1,000-foot view when it's an issue that should be near and dear to all of us.
Right.
It's happening. For example, we live in Georgia.
Yeah.
This case is taking up place how many hours? 4 hours away from where we live?
Exactly.
And this is just one case.
Yeah. That
take place every year.
Right. And that's the thing. It's people say, and then that's the other thing. Okay. So first of all, people will polarize so heavily and make, empathy out to be, a polarized leftist ideal. Right. But then the other thing is, those very same people won't have that empathy. Like there's no feeling of that empathy with, you know, the same people who say I'm a leftist, but then don't tweet out any links or post any links for anything, you know, for any change making, right? Mm-hmm. Who don't, you know, post donation or petition even links. And so it's like, again, I come back to, what is the point of, like, you know, we do obviously advocate for people to be more politically involved, right? Especially younger people. But, like, what is the point if you're not actually, you know, doing it? If you're just, you know, sitting on your high horse and casting aspersions, but you're not, you know, actually contributing to the change. What's the point?
Absolutely. And it's the way people wear it as, like, a medal of honor. They use it to tokenize themselves, to be like, oh, guys, I'm a Democrat, as if that gives them some sort of brownie points. And I feel like, especially over 2020, this whole, and I feel like we've talked about this before too, this whole sort of bandwagon woke culture thing where everyone's like, oh, without any sort of context, like, they'll just, like, 1 second they don't even know what the two-party system is, and the next minute they're like, oh my god, my lab partner is a Republican and I hate him. Like, do you even know what you're saying? Like, how self-important do you have to be to say things like that? And then on top of that, you wear that as a brand. You wear the fact that you politically align yourself as a leftist or as a liberal or as a progressive. Do you know, firstly, do you know what those terms mean? And how have you acted even in the past 15 days to say that you are, you know, a part of either of any of those platforms? Like, what have you done?
Have you contributed?
Have you? And it's like, the other thing is, again, it's like, why are these things being associated with any political opinion anyways?
Right.
Like, why are human rights being politicized? And I feel like, if anything, everyone's like, Gen Z, like, where the rebel, that's so, firstly, that's so cringy. Please shut up. It's and so by the cringy. Way,
like,
but it's like, we're not just, we're being so regressive by saying things like that, not knowing what they mean. And if anything, we're further polarizing the situation that's already been here for like 20-40 years already.
And
you're making the system worse by not contributing positively.
And that's, and then, I also feel like that's kind of erasure in its own, because, like, what about, you know, the civil rights leaders who actually marched in the street? Are you saying their generation was not, like, you know, was not a change-making generation?
Sitting in front of someone and judging them for like, you know what I mean? Like, the other day, this girl was talking about her fear of needles. This other girl is sitting in front of her, and she's like, oh, are you anti-vax? Like, what does that,
what is the connection?
It's like, not only what is the connection, it's like, they're looking for excuses to sort of show off their politics when that's not what this is about. This is about working towards the greater good. Exactly. And they think saying things like that all of a sudden makes them some sort of revolutionary leader. It's like, you know, you wouldn't be able to sit here and say things like that if it wasn't for the people that came before you. And it's, again, looking at things from that 1,000-foot view, thinking, oh, me acting this way and saying these things makes me better of a person than anyone, but it doesn't. You're not doing anything that's promoting
and
change.
To be honest, that's even, you know, you're chasing, you're, again, it's polarizing, because you're chasing people to, you know, one end of the spectrum or another, in the fact that, like, you're saying, oh, are you an anti-vaxxer because you have a fear of needles? Okay, but then that's also, you know, a differing type of conservative view. Like, the view of general, of making general statements or generalizing, you know, ideas, that is, you know, something not politically, but that is a conservative thing. Like, and again, I stress not politically, because you can't say all American political conservatives are doing that. What I'm saying is, the idea of conservatism and what you are claiming, you know, you, I hate my lab partner because he's Republican, to go with your example, right? To then say, like, oh, but if you don't agree with this, then that automatically makes, or not even if you don't agree, if you say something that seems even a little bit off to me, which, you know, who am I in this scenario? If you say anything that seems off to me, you must be a, you know, you must be a conservative. You must be a Republican. Because, and that's what's so frustrating, is that our people from our generation will claim to be like this woke, you know, chamber that's like coming up with all these ideas, when it's like all these ideas, you know, we're just kind of soaking them all up and implementing them. It doesn't mean that, you know, we're this great, amazing, like, you know, fighting for, you know, practically we're on the streets begging for justice. Of course there are people doing it, and of course there, you know, it is a thing that's happening, but to claim that you're this, you know, huge generation of justice and, you know, we are bringing all the social change, but then not do anything about it, it's so disingenuous.
It also speaks to the point of, like, you're right. I feel like maybe generationally we're much more accepting of each other than prior generations, maybe even mm-hmm. our parents' generation, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like before this acquittal, I mm-hmm. sort of felt that. I sort of felt like I was having more and more conversations with the same people that I always surrounded myself with, but we were having conversations that were bigger than us. You know, they were about things that I feel like genuinely mattered. And that's not to say, you know, conversations about your crush don't matter, but right. it's that it was that feeling of like, oh, we all agree about this and we all feel empowered enough to say something about this. And I felt like, okay, well, maybe people are, you know, genuinely becoming more active mm-hmm. in this fight and things are going to change. And then this acquittal happened. And it's like, I have not heard, you know what I mean? It almost put that entire thought process backwards, because mm-hmm. here we are saying things like, you know what I mean? Advocating against white supremacy, et cetera, et cetera. And then I have not heard a single person keep up with this trial.
Right.
I don't know that many people who are familiar with the case either. Like, sure. Like a year ago, it was, you know, they all laughed about it when they saw this white kid walking around with a gun and they were like, can you believe him? Ha ha ha. But it's not funny. It wasn't funny then. It's not funny now. And no one has kept up with the trial. And again, that goes to the point of, one minute you can't be like, I'm a liberal and I'm empathetic and I care, and then actively not care.
Right. It goes both ways. You have to, if you want to claim to be this, you know, end all be all of knowledge, if you want to claim to be this, you know, morally good person, then be that person. You can't just say it and then not
also,
do it.
It's also this bit of like, oh, like I'm just not going to say anything because I don't know enough about it. Great. It's amazing that you don't want to speak on issues that, you know, you don't know that much about because you don't want to say something that's problematic or could potentially, you know, get you stuck in a situation you don't want to be stuck in. But it's also like, it's I'm just going to say it's embarrassing when, or you should be embarrassed if you're like a 32-year-old white woman who's just now figuring out that racism exists. You know what I mean? The point where like the education and educating yourself, like we're always advocating for that, but that point was years ago. It was a lot, like, get with the system. This is the bit where you start advocating for the people around you and start at least attempting to make a change in your community. Like this and whole bit of like, I don't know enough. Why don't you know enough? Like, you've been here for a lot longer than I have. I'm a 16-year-old brown girl, and my experiences speak for themselves. A lot of experiences which, you know what I mean, people that look like you have sort of weighed down on me.
Right.
Whether it's comments, whether whatever it is, like,
right, microaggressions, anything.
Microaggressions.
Well, and that kind of contributes again to what we were saying earlier of, like, people are saying, you know, I'm so woke. I'm participating actively in woke culture. I am the change. I am what's happening in the streets. You see those protests? That's me. Like, everyone says that, but then are you, no one is asking you to, you know, make some picket signs and go to protest. We're asking you, like, have you even posted about it? Have you, and not even just post, have you posted in a way that contributes to the change? Have you posted a petition? Have you posted a donation link? Have you done anything that's actually going to, like, get the ball moving? And if the answer is no, then you don't get to say, you know, I'm so, you know, I'm the change. My generation is the change, and I'm a great example of that. That's not your token to claim.
And that's not to say that protests aren't effective. No, like, they absolutely are. Like, go and participate, and if you can, absolutely go for it. But I think the point Viva's trying to make is that it's more than a one-day, one-month thing, or even a one-year thing. You get what
it's
I
mean? It's not a fad.
It's something that you need to be thinking about consciously every day.
Right.
Because, again, it's like, how could... It's for me, it's almost hard for me to wrap my head around it. And I don't mean to be like, oh, like I know so much and I'm so educated and blah, 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 blah. It's hard for me to wrap my head around the fact that people don't care. How could you not care? Like, how could you not care every second of every minute of every day? Like,
Well, and then you have the people also.
And it's not hard either. It's not like you have, it's like, it's much harder for you to actually, you know, spend time arguing against something than you just actively being a part of whatever's going on.
Right.
It's much easier to participate than choose not to, is what I'm trying to say.
Right. And then you have also, you know, conversely, people on, you know, the more educated side of things who are like, you have to be an expert in this to talk about it. Mm-hmm. You have to be someone who makes no mistakes with anything you say, which is part of the reason that, you know, then people, not to make excuses, because I'm certainly not trying to, but that's part of the reason that people will be like, you know, then it's better off that I just don't learn, because it is all about pride, isn't it? It's all about arrogance. So like, if you feel that you're going to be embarrassed, why would you actively try to go out and learn? So why don't we all just acknowledge that none of us is perfect? None of us knows everything about, you know, social change or social movements, because I don't, you don't. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to say that we're, you know, obsessed with politics, we make everything about politics. Well, we're not even, you know, half of what it could be. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And I quickly like to interject, like, going to your point of, like, we're all imperfect and that entire spiel, we have an editor for this podcast for a reason. We screw up our information a lot of the times, too. Like, that's just how these things work. And it's also, going back to my previous
point. Shout out, Dikshu.
Shout out, Dikshu. But it's, like, again, this is not a political theory class where everything that you say and post on social media has to be correct. Should you probably do a little bit of research before you go and say something to your following? And it doesn't matter if it's 100 people or 500 people or a million people. You know what I mean? It's like anything that you can say can impact anyone. You don't know. So it's always good to have a base and be at least a little familiar and researched. But again, that speaks to the point of that doesn't take a lot of time or effort. It's one Google search away. And like, if you can spend 12 hours doing random shit that, like, you know, it's completely unproductive, you can take a second to search something up real quick, fact check.
Right.
Like,
well, and that's the other thing that annoys me to no end is the people that won't do any of that. But then if you, you know, the royal you, if you try to do something, you know, anything that shows any advocacy for a social cause, they'll be the first to be an expert on it. Like, they'll suddenly have this whole knowledge of library just to, you know, sort of like say you're wrong about this, or just to criticize. I'm sorry, Becky, I didn't ask what your opinion was. If you want to advocate so strongly, if you want to tell me so strongly why the death penalty is good and why you're also simultaneously pro-life, that's fine. You do your research and post on your own. I didn't ask you to, you know, give me critiques on my, you know, style of delivering that information. And that's the other thing, is that people will be so, you know, happy to not do any of the work and then kind of latch on to what people say and kind of pretend that they're an expert and just kind of bounce off, you know, the person who did do all their research, kind of bounce off that person's, you know, everything.
There's this one example that comes to mind, and I was walking with this girl once, and I was talking about the same thing, like being politically active, etc. And she was like, one of my friends, like, he doesn't like when people post on their social media a lot because he feels like it doesn't amount to anything. So I immediately was outraged. I was like, half the things that are going on in the world right now, I bet you and your friend wouldn't know if it wasn't on social media. If people weren't reposting these posts, you wouldn't even know that they were happening. So firstly, I don't know how you can say that. And her immediate response was to be, I mean, don't worry, I don't feel that way, I'm a liberal. But she herself has never posted anything. She hasn't even posted, like, granted, I would rather not have her post this because it'd just be super performative, but she didn't even post those, like, stupid quotes that are like, I stand with you and I see you. She didn't, like, participate in Blackout Tuesday. So basically, she has no, you know what I mean?
No claim to that.
No
whatsoever.
Claim. She has no claim whatsoever because she doesn't even do the very, I'd rather have her not do it at all, but, like, not even the bare minimum. I'm a white girl and I'm going to say things like, I see you and I stand with you. Like,
Right.
Amazing, Felicia. You're not blind. Great. At least we know that you can't tick off that minority group on your college application. Right. It's like, right. She's like, my friend doesn't like it when other people post and spam their stories with this because mm-hmm. he feels like it doesn't. Why are you telling me to begin with? And then right. why are you defending yourself? It's a messed up situation. And I feel like it. Like, I think we're saying all of this and everyone's probably like, why are they going on about this for an hour when the episode's uh-huh. about the criminal justice system? It's mm-hmm. again about that 1,000-foot view versus that 10-foot view where right. all amounts to one thing. It's like if you go on social media and if you're posting about it and if you're by doing that, whether you know it or not, you are changing people's minds.
Right.
Like, for example, a lot of our follower base, like they probably can't vote yet. Most of them are probably mm-hmm. underage. They're probably our age. But right. it's this thing of like, even the fact that I've had at least a good 50 to 100 conversations over social media just over the past 2 years because mm-hmm. of what I've posted online and how people, you know, people want to share their opinions with me. And we mm-hmm. argue a little bit. And I'm like, I feel like this and they feel like that. Like even having those conversations, I can tell that people's mind, you know what I mean? Like I can tell that those conversations are shifting some sort of gears in their heads on right. how they're eventually going to vote, hopefully. Right. Like it all amounts to something. And then when right. they get to that point where they do vote, they'll be more well-researched. They'll look into people's platforms and then you right. vote. And then your representatives will hopefully reflect your ideals. Then the legislation they pass will hopefully create some sort of change within the criminal justice system. And then you see a difference in the way people are being treated, people of mm-hmm. color versus woman versus people of the LGBTQ plus community. It's mm-hmm. all a cycle. And this whole thing of like posting on social media or speaking out publicly does nothing. I don't understand where that's even coming from because mm-hmm. I best know that you've been taking history since you were in preschool.
Mm.
And I best know that you know what the civil rights movement is. Right. So I don't know where this whole thing of like speaking out doesn't amount to any social change is coming mm-hmm. from.
And these will be the same people that are, you know, so quick to devote their life to, you know, memorizing all of the discography of their favorite artist or mm-hmm. like, you know, learning every lyric to their favorite artist's song. But then, you know, this is too much work. This is too much, you know, there's too, oh no, oh no, no, no. There's too much history here. I can't learn it all. I don't think that's how it works. I don't think that's how it works. I think you're being a little disingenuous.
And it's because like, there's like you so can't many.
Say, mm-hmm. Right. No, you go ahead.
It's just like there's so many options for it too. For example, you like listening to music, listen to a podcast. Right. What is that called? The Daily. Listen to The Daily every morning. Like it's right. not that.
What's the difference?
Yeah, exactly. It's like it's not, no one is asking you to become this like political criminal justice warrior.
Right.
Like no one is even expecting that from you. But it's like if everyday people like Vivek and I who mm-hmm. for example, we're juniors in high school, like mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure this is an exaggeration because I don't know what life has a hold for me, but I'm pretty sure it's not going to get much more stressful than this ever again. Mm. But we're still like able to find an hour once a week to like record a podcast episode. And I'm not right. saying by doing this we're some like, you know, we're like, you Hero. Know, changing the world or anything.
Right.
But it's something.
Right.
And it's
and
like.
And we're yeah. trying is the thing. Mm-hmm. There are people that will say like, oh, I can't do this. It'll be too hard. But like, you haven't even tried. You don't even. What is the worst that's going to happen? What is the worst that's going to happen? No one's going to look at your post. No one's going to like it. Okay. Big deal. Who cares? Like, are you really that materialistic that if something you do doesn't have a return, you can't do it just because you know it's the right thing to do? Like, and then the other thing is that people will say things like, you know, after the fact, they'll be like, or behind closed doors, they'll be like, Vivek, guess what? I saw your post. I totally agree with you. But then like, you didn't repost it. I bet you didn't send the link to anybody to donate or to sign mm-hmm. the petitions. So what's the point of saying that to me afterwards? Great. I'm glad you liked it. I don't think that's really, you know, I don't think you're being genuine. I don't think you really liked it. But whatever. But did you like actually contribute? Did you actually do what I said to do?
Yeah, exactly. And firstly, the whole question of like, how is you posting this creating any change? It should just be a question that shouldn't be asked to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like I keep saying, there are so many outlets, books. Like Vivek and I have a teacher who sort of has hinted that she has been pro-death penalty prior to reading this book. And now her opinion on it has changed. And I'm not, you know, sort of excusing her opinion or whatever, but hopefully that means she's going to vote differently this time around.
Right.
Hopefully she's going to help elect people who are against the death penalty. Again, it's like things like this. Mm-hmm. Like, educating people is never something that should be diminished.
Right.
Whether it's an Instagram post, whether it's writing a book, whether it's hosting a podcast, it all impacts people in one way or another. And it's also
it all snowballs.
It all tumbleweeds, as I've said before.
In what, our second recording?
I think our first or second recording.
Our first or second.
Have we mentioned it's our fourth time recording this episode?
Fourth fucking time.
I'm just going to say it's probably never going to get better than the third time we recorded it. And I was really hoping that would be the one that would stick. But
it's our own.
Alas, here we are.
Again. But yeah, so like, and then that, it really annoys me that people will be like tokenizing their support of these movements, right? Mm. For cheap, like, you know, popularity points. Like, I can't believe I'm about to say this, but look at me, I'm hip. I'm cool. You know, I believe in the same things as you youngsters, even though, you know, it's probably not the same thing because I don't know if you guys actually believe it or you're just saying it. But look, like, I'm so with the times. I'm so, you know, I'm practically swimming in the movement of social change.
Can I just say, like
you're not.
It's also like, I don't hate to be this person. I'm happy being this person. But it's like, it's this thing of how can you even find it in you to say something like that when in the same time that you're living, you've witnessed cases like Tamir Rice, when you know, at the same time that you're saying this simultaneously, there are cases like Breonna Taylor's.
Right.
How could you even, for like, again, it's a self-importance. For a second, can you forget that it's you that's creating these posts and curating all of these petitions and donation links? It's not about you, and to even make it about you for a second is so gross to me, because like, it's this whole motif of people are dying, you know, but people are dying. People are literally losing their lives at the hands of other people based on the, you know, based on the color of their skin. And you're here and you have the nerve to criticize other people for educating people.
And imagine, like, if you then met Breonna Taylor somehow, is she really going to appreciate the fact that, like, the fact that she's, of course, going to be, you know, she would, of course, say something like, you know, I'm so appreciative that you're contributing to the movement. But would she really appreciate the fact that you, if you specified that you had created all of these, you know, petition links, would that really benefit her in any way? No.
That's the other thing. It's like, it's not about the credit. Right. Like, people need to realize, by claiming themselves as a liberal, et cetera, whatever it is, like, okay? Like, you just sound so stupid.
Yeah.
You, again, like, kids, minors are losing their lives over this.
Yeah.
Like, they'll be holding a water bottle. I don't keep using these things, examples. A textbook.
Right.
And people, white people, have the audacity to weaponize them and see them as these targets, as these threats,
right,
and before handling it the correct legal way, procedurally, they opt for murder. And in times like these, you have the audacity to sit there and be like, oh, well, I did this and I made this petition, and you know, like, once in 2009 I was sort of microaggressive to this brown kid, but like, I understand now, I'm all with, like, Black Lives Matter now. I can't even believe it. Like, it's
frustrating on another level.
Yeah. Or like, so even like when our classmates say things like, oh my God, my dad is super racist.
Oh my God.
My white, straight, cishet, like, father is so racist. Like, if he saw you in our neighborhood, he would move. Like, what are you talking about?
I can't.
Like, do you hear yourself?
I have to share this story because I think it's kind of funny. So in middle school, there was this one kid, right? And he was like, I'm pretty sure he low-key was a racist too. But one time he was telling me, he was like, this exact same thing. He was like, my dad's so racist. And literally he used the exact same thing you just said. If he ever saw you in our neighborhood, and then guess what he said? He goes, if he ever saw you in our neighborhood, he'd probably shoot you.
Please.
Puppies. I was like, why? Why? I just want to go, you know, I just want to live. I just want to, just let me drink my black coffee and live. Why are you telling me this? I don't want to know. And then it turns into a therapy session for them. It's like, you know, I fight with him all the time about it. I argue with him.
Oh my God. It's that thing of like, I'm really trying to change his mind. But they know that I'm like a liberal. So like they're supportive of me. And it's so gross. And my life is so hard. It's so gross. It's like, and again, we're saying this, and to me, when you're telling me the story, it's completely normal. But like, can you, if you're someone who's white and you're listening to the right, like, could you imagine that? Yeah. Like how our lives must have been thus far till this point. And some of you still have the audacity to say things like that. And this is like, in this example, it's a kid. But we've had like grown adults, like 30 to 40 year old, like white women coming up to us and looking to us for consolation because of something they said. They're like, you know, I'm not trying to be racist, right? Like, I didn't mean to be racist. Like, I hope I didn't come off that way. And like, you know what I mean? Constantly and mixing in
situations
up.
Where it isn't even relevant. Like, an event will have happened two, like, weeks ago with totally different people or, like, you know, mostly different people. And, like, just because, you know, you see, oh, okay, these two kids are brown and, you know, maybe I should go and maybe they'll assuage my, you know, conscience. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll soothe my guilt. Mm-hmm. Like,
again,
literally, I wish those people would just see in the moment that, like, by coming over and saying, you know, am I racist? Maybe in the moment you think you're helping. Maybe you think, oh, okay, maybe this will show them that I'm still thinking about it. Maybe you are doing it with, you know, good intentions, right? Mm-hmm. But, like, that doesn't do anything. It means nothing.
It also goes to the point of, like, best friend, at this point, like, get your shit together. Mm. You should know how and what to say and how to act around, like, people of color.
Mm-hmm. Without being racist?
Without being racist and without being offensive. Yeah. Like, what is this whole thing of, like... I'm just like learning. Like, I hope I didn't offend you. I hope I wasn't what the fuck is up with that?
Yeah.
No, like real, please. What is up with that? And again, it's these same people who then have offspring and the same mentality seeps into them. And like, progressives aren't like joking around when they say it's the youth vote that counts. You get what I mean? It all stems, it's like this whole nature versus nurture debate, right? It's like whatever if you're going around in front of your own kids, you know, and you're saying, and you're going to brown people and you're like, oh, I wasn't being racist, right? What do you think your kids are going to think? They're going to think going to think there's some sort of leeway there for them to be microaggressive. Mm. They're going to grow up with that mentality. Right. How do you think their voting habits are going to turn out?
And I hate that, like, I just know that there will be people that listen to, you know, or that hear us say this, not even in this podcast, but that will hear us talk about these things or these sort of issues, like, in person. Mm-hmm. And then those same people will be like, no, you guys are taking it too seriously. No, that's not a big thing. She apologized. This lady apologized. Why are you making... Oh, my God. And even other people of color... That's what gets me so much, is that people, other kids of color will be quicker to, you know, side with the authority figure who, you know, coincidentally, but not so coincidentally, is white. Mm-hmm. They'll be so quick to side with them because they're seeking that, like, validation from them rather than, you know, siding with the fact that, like, two kids, which there's, it's just a rule in high school, right? Or just in school in general, that like you stand with and believe what kids are saying more than, you know, you're better friends with kids than you are with the teacher, right? Mm-hmm. So like, why are you so quick then to forget that and just become best friends with the teacher and assuage their guilt for them? And simultaneously put the kid down for saying, you know, this is wrong, or for pointing this out. Not even for pointing it out, for just venting to you, right?
I feel like this is a conversation that could have an entire episode to itself, but it's like, it's sort of diminishing the voices of marginalized people, right?
it's this constant feel like what you have to say isn't important enough. Same thing that happens to us when we post on social media and people have the audacity to be like, why are you talking about this? Like,
oh, that annoys
like,
me.
You're so young. Like, you know what I mean? It's like,
or even like ad hominem attacks with like, you know, you only have X amount of followers or like you're only getting X amount of likes.
It's so this constant need to like diminish our experiences. And again, goes back to, I feel like I'm trying super hard to connect this back to the Kyle Rittenhouse quittle, but it's that same thing of like, you know what I mean? The reason those first originally peaceful protests and then riots erupted was because a black man was shot for no valid reason.
Right.
But how has justice been served in that situation? It hasn't.
Right.
But then a white kid goes off with a military-grade weapon, shoots into a crowd of people, okay, claims self-defense, and how somehow that, when he's acquitted, that's justice.
Well, and
it's
a
like
lot
the
of
completely different verbiage that people use, too, for people of color. Whether it's like that Trump tweet where, what was he saying? Black people. And then he was referring to the people that rioted as something else. I forget the exact verbiage.
I forgot. I think he was just calling, you know, BLM, he was like, protesters and looters and rioters. And with his, you know,
I feel like he said something rather.
MAGA mob, he
yeah,
was like,
I think he said something
these
rather.
These were just peaceful protesters.
Yeah. The good, it was like the good men and women that, you know, like they didn't mean any harm and shit. It's that, and again, it even goes back to the Travis Scott concert where it's like, people, again, so I personally believe he's fully responsible for the 9 lives that were lost that night. He was made aware of the situation. He knew there weren't enough paramedics on the scene. He knew the venue couldn't contain that level of, you know, that strength of people. And he went ahead with the concert anyways. Right. But it's like the amount of death threats he's gotten, the sort of words people have used to completely reduce him to like a slur. You know what I mean?
Right.
Imagine if that was like a Shawn Mendes, a Justin Bieber, a Harry Styles concert. The verbiage would have been completely different.
Right.
They're the same age as Travis Scott, but it would have been like, oh, but he's young and he wasn't made aware. And it's
right.
And again, it's even going to the back to the Kyle Rittenhouse case. None of us, even Vivek and I, we aren't saying he should be like tortured in prison or something for what he did. We're asking that he be dealt with the same way people have and the people of color have in the past. With the press, like, you know what I mean? That has set a certain precedent.
Right.
For the criminal justice system to go back on that and, you know, treat a black child and a white child completely differently makes the point of that's what we're trying to change.
Right.
Like, that's what we're fighting against is the bias, not the, you know?
Right. Well, and that's, it's so frustrating that people will be like, you know, so hesitant to, not even hesitant, will be so averse to, you know, entering into conversations about this, who will say that, like, no, you're just making everything political. No, that wasn't offensive. Or will be so quick to invalidate something. And then we'll turn around and be the same people who are, you know, obsessing about this fictional thing, who will be obsessing about a fictional book series, a fictional movie. Like, you are spending so much energy talking about, you know, shielding yourself in this little tent of like, of something that's not even happening in our world. And you'll ignore the fact that people are being slaughtered unjustly in the street.
Okay, well, to that point, as someone who considers herself sort of hopelessly in love with fiction, it's not to say don't indulge in those bits. Like,
not at all.
It's just like if you can invest time and energy into all these other things,
you can split it.
It's like these are clearly things that you care about. Why is it so hard for you to care about your fellow Homo sapiens? Like,
like, why? And also, if not even just why is it so hard for you to care, but like, why? I truly do believe that like half of the people that say this shit, who say like, you know, you're making everything political, it's not that big of a deal. This, you know, microaggression wasn't actually a microaggression. It's just you being sensitive. I do believe that some of those people just aren't educated enough. And if they were educated, they'd probably not think that, you know, in that shitty of a way. But, like, you're not even willing to educate yourself. You're more willing to stay ignorant just, like, so you can comfort yourself.
But I feel like these same people are like the ones that are, you know, that are so quick to defend themselves and be like, I'm not a Trump supporter. Mm. Like, I'm not like a Republican. I'm not a conservative. If, again, if you feel the need to say that, then you should probably be educated to some extent already.
You know what I mean? I was even more radical. You probably are. If you're having to say, you know, I'm not a conservative. I'm not someone who thinks conservatively, not even using the political term. But like, if you're having to say, you know, if you're having to defend your ideas by saying, you know, oh, it's not that I'm thinking conservatively. It's not that I'm thinking, you know, in a racist way. If you're having to say that, most likely you are, and you just don't realize it, especially mm-hmm. if you're someone who has not, you know, educated themselves, who has not taken the time to like study, you know, certain events, not even study, just like
again, learn. It goes to the point of like, before you even say shit like that, you should be educated. Like, you should know, sort of, you should sort of be able to gauge the situation you're in. Again, speaking to this point of like, that bit where you, the self-educating bit, should have happened a long time ago. Like, get with the times. This is not, like, again, what are you doing as, like, a fully grown, you know what I mean? A fully grown white person just sitting there and saying things and throwing around political labels, not being educated. Like, where is that even coming from? Thinking. It's like, at this point, when these things are happening around you, I would hope that if you have the sort of courage to say something like, I'm like a radical liberal and I'm this and I'm a socialist, blah, 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 blah. I would hope that you've developed an opinion based on things that you've read, based on past experiences, based on, you know what I mean, history.
So basically, all of this to say that everything sucks. I'm kidding, I'm kidding, I'm kidding. All of this to say the US justice system is messed up. It is. It's an undeniable fact. Indeniable, undeniable. Either one, it's a fact. You can't deny it. So you might as well try to change it. And if you don't, you're not a good person.
Yeah, it's all, as we've been saying this entire episode and our past however many episodes we put out at this point, it's a cycle. Participate mm-hmm. in democracy, because that's why it exists. That's why right. our government functions the way it does. And right. it's easy. It's easy to do, so just do it. And right. that way, it'll save all of us time from being, you know, turning 80 and sitting on our porch and complaining about all the things we could have done to make right. the world a better place, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah. hopefully it will cross off some regrets in your life too. Yeah. But yeah, all the AdSense for this episode will be going to the NAACP, just like our last episode, like I said at the beginning of this mm-hmm. one. And yeah, we're thoroughly sorry if this episode was all over the place, but fourth time re-recording, just, yeah, bye.
Bye. Please, bye. Please, for the last time, let this be bye. Brought to you by Deekshu Devrasetty for editing, Vanshika Khatwani and Jasmine White for graphics, Puneet Bajwa and Sanj Varyani for socials, and to my wonderful co-host Kirtana for putting up with me.